It took a lot longer than it should have to get to Las Vegas. Nothing looked familiar. I was beginning to think I might miss my flight when finally I began to see familiar ground and I knew that Vegas wasn't far off. I didn't see any more suspicious cars. I looked out the window constantly for a craft or some sign of them. I saw nothing. As I got closer to the heart of Vegas, the feeling that I would see the aliens suddenly grew much stronger. I kept feeling like I should be somewhere, but where? I finally said aloud, "Look, if you want me to be somewhere, just lead me. I can't look out the window anymore, I will crash this car. I am too tired." I watched closely for my exit, yet, when I saw it I just kept going for some reason, without any thought at all. After I drove past it I knew that it was probably meant to be. Now, where am I going? I still had to take the rental car back and I didn't have a map of the area. And it made me nervous. I saw the lights of the Vegas strip off in the distance. The airport was close to that and so was the car rental. If I headed for the lights I would be okay. I saw another sign for an exit but, by the time I realized where it led to, it was too late to make the turn off. In my head I said, "Lead me to where you want me to be. I will listen." After a couple more exits, I finally pulled off the freeway. The road took me on turn after turn. As I drove I knew I was going in the right direction. I kept driving until I came to a large intersection with a gas station on the corner. When lost, what better place to ask directions? I pulled in, parked the car and stepped out. I now knew that I was exactly where they wanted me to be. The lighting around the lot was very bright. There were lots of lights outside the building and the gas pump area. When I looked in the direction of the building, I could see a star low in the sky, just above the building. As soon as I laid eyes on it, I knew it was not a star. I looked up to see a second orb directly above me and a third orb to the left. They were all very bright and, considering all of the light pollution and how low they were definitely not stars. "Hello," I said looking towards the orbs. "Okay," I said in my head. "Now what?" "Take a picture and just watch," I heard. Well, that was just silly. I couldn't sit in this parking lot at the gas station staring up into the sky and not have anyone notice. Everyone would think I was crazy. "I see you, I know it's you but I'm not going to sit here and watch you." Once again, I wondered if I would be able to share this moment with people or if they would just think I was nuts. I still needed to know how to get to the car rental business, so I had to ask directions. I had three options: the limo driver filling his car with gas, the taxi driver standing beside his vehicle or the attendant inside the store. I chose the taxi driver who gave me very clear directions. I felt confused because the spot I was at looked somewhat familiar. I was fairly sure I was to go the opposite direction from what this man was telling me. He repeated the directions again, then a third time. "You got it right? You're sure? Don't go the other way, okay? Do you understand?" He was so adamant that I had to promise him I would follow his directions to the letter. I hopped back into the car and off I went, ready to follow his crystal clear directions. When I turned off the street I was on, I immediately smiled and said, "All right, what do you want me to see?" The taxi driver gave me directions that put me on the other side of a chain link fence that had the Vegas strip in the background. Slightly above it was the star. I smiling and even chuckled a little bit. Why not? I thought. After everything that happened at the conference with the orbs, why not here again? I stopped the car and got out. As I stood at the fence the familiar voice said clearly in my mind, "Take a picture." I did so without hesitation but questioned why. No one would believe this, no one. How could they? I was alone and a picture of what looked like a star wouldn't be proof of anything. And then I heard the voice again. "Take pictures over time. Hashi progression of light of the sun coming up will show that it has not moved." So, there I stood and waited for a short time and then snapped my second picture. The flash went off again and all I could think was, "Hashis won't work. My camera isn't that good." After about another 5 minutes, I heard a scream in my head, "You have to get out of here, right now, or you will be in big trouble." I grabbed my camera and jumped into the car as fast as I could. The door was almost closed as I looked up towards the fence. There I saw a police cruiser on the other side driving slowly past me. The driver tried to get a good look at me as I slowly and calmly drove off. It was then that I took notice of some of the area. There were warning signs on the fence, what they said I didn't have time to read completely. To the left on the other side of the fence were many parked cars. I knew that this was part of the airport and I had been looking over a big open field, towards the strip. Where was I? Perhaps, I thought, this was where people park their cars to take off in those big white planes that they say go daily to Area 51. I was now fully awake and freaked out. I had to take more pictures so, for the next hour, I drove in a big circle over and over, stopping every once in a while to snap pictures. I asked for directions again only to find that my original feeling was correct. If I went the way I originally suggested to the taxi driver, I would have been at the car rental place in less than 2 minutes. Instead, I was now looking at this strange star orb that didn't move, hearing a voice speak to me in my head and taking pictures that I wasn't even sure would turn out crazy. The sun was now fully up and yet the star orb had not moved. I couldn't wait any longer. I had to take the car back or I would miss my flight home. I had a strong feeling they wanted me to take more pictures. I have to go now. I can't wait any longer. If I do, I will miss my plane and I don't have the money to buy another flight, I said out loud. I stopped looking at the orb for a couple of minutes. I drove around the block and, 1 minute later, the star orb was gone. I had watched it for at least an hour and it didn't move an inch. The minute I decide to leave, it disappears. It was them. Now all I had to do was develop the photos to prove it was the alien's orb. The car rental was only moments away and, after I returned the keys, I had 20 minutes to wait until my shuttle took me to the airport. I stood in the parking lot needing a release, so I called Vanessa, as I knew she would still be in the hotel room. I tried to convey to her the events that took place after I left the hotel, but I think I only freaked her out even more with my talk of the orbs. She thought they may all be the work of the government. It didn't matter to me. I was able to speak freely with someone who wouldn't judge me. And it was enough for the moment. The flight back to Vancouver departed on time. While I was in the air, all I could think about was the past 24 hours. I had been privileged to see the orbs. Not once but twice. If they showed up on my film from my car ride outside Lachlan, that would make it 3 times. I saw the events that led me to this place in my life stacked up in a row like dominoes. When would they all come crashing down? If the orbs were on that film, I would at least have some sort of proof of my sanity. I kept telling myself, I am the sanest person I know. As frightening as that may sound, I know it's true. Once I arrived home, I slept for the afternoon. The film with the star was on my mind as I tried to sleep. Who could I get to process the film? Once I awoke, I made a call to a friend of a friend and attempted to tell her, in a frantic and irrational manner, the events that had allowed me to get the photos. I made a fool of myself. Once again, I was left feeling out of place and already longed to be back with people that knew and accepted who I was and what I believed. I learned from my interaction with this friend of a friend that it's up to me to feel comfortable, not for others to make me feel comfortable. It was a valuable lesson. After that, I decided to walk up to the pharmacy to get my film developed. I told the man who was processing my film that I wanted all the pictures, even if they came out black. I also told him I wanted them right away no matter the cost, and not to let anyone else pick them up. I knew I sounded paranoid. I tried to keep the negative thoughts away, reminding myself that I was not insane. I left the pharmacy and went back home to wait. An hour finally passed and I walked slowly down the street, almost not wanting to see what might have turned up on the pictures. And his moment was an important one for me. Why they wanted me to take the photos was not clear, But there was one thing I knew for sure. If it wasn't clear now, it would be when the time was right. After paying for the photos, I took a deep breath and picked up the small package from the counter before walking out to the sidewalk. I felt lightheaded as I walked down the alley on my way back home. Slowing my pace, I opened the envelope to see the pictures now exposed. I flipped past the many pictures of the people I met at the conference before I saw it. There, clearly, in my first picture at poolside were the two round orbs. I could also see the three star orbs in the second photo. The two pictures I took blindly as they had requested on outside of Lachlan also had orbs visible in the pictures, just as they said they would be. The truth was there in front of my eyes, an orb on each photo. I stopped in the alley, tears in my eyes. I looked up to the sky, and thank you. And thank you. I said in a whisper. Walking a new path. Life after the UFO conference was filled with a lot of excitement. It didn't take long for my new life path to begin to unfold before me. After only 10 weeks, I put all of my belongings into storage and gave notice to quit my job. Now with no ties to keep me where I was, I had the freedom to listen to the guidance of my soul. My mother's health hadn't been good for some time and I had great concern for her well-being. She was still living in the small town where my alien contact began, so many years ago. I knew I also needed to go back there to search for the objects the aliens asked me to bury when I was 4 or 5 years old. And this wouldn't be an easy task, as I knew it would take me some time to excavate the area in order to find it. With both of these facts in mind, the decision to move back to Cranbrook was an easy one. I knew that once I returned to Cranbrook to be with my mom, it would be difficult to leave her to do any traveling. I had been offered an opportunity to meet with a writer in Roswell for the annual Roswell Festival. I thought it would be a great opportunity to go back to the Southwest one more time to charge my soul with its energy. With no job, no home and very little money, I sat at my friend's computer and looked over the itinerary I had chosen for the trip. It would be 3 weeks in the most beautiful place in the world for my soul. The Four Corners area. And this was a great beginning of a new life for me. No longer was I going to hide my truth from people, it was time to get to work and begin to share my experiences. As I stared at the computer, I lifted my right hand and extended my index finger to hit the key to accept the itinerary on the screen in front of me. I took a deep breath and, exhaling, I said out loud, "In 2 weeks I will have no home, no job and no money. I am now ready to do your work. I hope that you will be there to support me." I pressed enter and in that single moment, I felt my life change. The decision was final, I felt relieved that there was no turning back and no more hiding. I felt a sense of freedom but knew it would be a slow progression towards finishing the book. I still had about 2 hours before I had to go to work, so I took my friend's dog for a short walk. While we were in the park, a voice in my head said, "Look up and you will see us." As I did in Nevada, I listened and began to scan the skies. "I don't see you," I thought. "We will see you later," boomed in my head. I kept searching the skies all the way back to my friend's home but saw nothing. I then had a short rest before work. At about 4:15 p.m. I left the house to walk to the bus stop where I was taking the bus to work. It was a perfect day, the sky was crystal blue with a few white fluffy clouds nearby. As usual, I kept my eyes to the skies. Really, I didn't expect to see anything. I turned onto 49th Street and walked to the bus stop. As I stood there waiting, I looked up. It was then I noticed two bald eagles circling just above and to the left of me. My first thought was that this was a good omen. The last time I had seen two eagles was just before my first trip to Arizona, back in May 2003. I smiled and thanked the eagles for being there for me to see. I did a quick glance down the street for the bus and, when I looked back up, the eagles were gone. 49th is a busy street in the middle of the city. Vancouver is known as a green city with lots of trees. The houses that line this street had large hemlock tree growth all around them. and inking the huge cedar hedge beside me hid the eagles, I walked 30 feet to the street corner to get a broader look at the sky. As I looked straight up, I saw above me a star orb and one round orb, silvery green in color. No way, I thought. They hovered on the underside of two big white puffy clouds. They didn't move but stayed in a fixed position. Is that you? I asked. It was 5 p.m., the sky was crystal blue and the sun was out, there would be no stars at this hour. I was sure it was them. Thank you, I said in my mind, smiling ear to ear. I took a couple of steps closer to the street corner while watching the orbs as I reached in my pocket for my cell phone. I tried 3 friends only to find no one home. I wanted to share this moment with someone. Finally, I reached my friend Shannon. Just as she answered, the 2 orbs began to move toward the Earth. They both began to move at the same moment and stayed in perfect formation as they descended. I relayed to Shannon everything that was playing out in front of my eyes. At the exact same time, both the orbs stopped moving just above the tree line. They were now across the street from me, near the back end of a home, about 4 stories high in the sky. I was very touched by this event and asked the orbs, "Do you have a message?" The response was as clear as the voice in Vegas, "We are always with you." I began to cry, not because I was sad but from pure gratitude and happiness. How fortunate I was to have this happen to me. When I sat at the computer only 2 hours earlier, I asked them to support me. They certainly showed me that I am never alone. They are always with me no matter where I am or what I am doing. It was an indescribable feeling of love that came over me. I was still on the phone with Shannon, telling her how close they were to me. The orbs were now both stationary. After a moment, the round orb began to move. I wasn't sure what it was going to do as it picked up speed and moved closer to the star orb while traveling parallel to the Earth. I thought for a split second that the two would merge. Instead, it went under the star orb and kept going until it was out of sight behind the tree line. The star orb didn't move for another couple of seconds. Shannon couldn't understand why I was crying. I tried to tell her it was because I felt so fortunate. I don't think she understood my response. I looked down at the ground and wiped my eyes of their tears, and when I looked back up, the star orb was gone. It was time to get off the phone and get back to the bus stop. How did I arrive at this point in my life? I wondered. I felt blessed and knew that the path in front of me was the right one. There would be no more waiting. Nothing could have been clearer than the fact that I had chosen the right path to follow. I went to my job that night and was very quiet. I watched all the people and tried to imagine what they would do if they had my life. Would they go crazy? I had seen people lose touch with reality over experiences far less strange than mine. I must be somehow important to the aliens. They kept making that clear to me. And at afternoon they had given me another sign to stay focused and keep following my spirit. The 2 weeks of work went quickly and, before I could relax, I was off on another airplane to the Four Corners area. On this trip, as with all other trips, I had only an idea of where I wanted to travel. I have learned over the years that if you plan every moment, you will miss everything that may be waiting for you. Although I had a list of places I wanted to see, my spirit would have the final say as to where I went and what I did along the way. I landed in Albuquerque on June 30th, where I went directly to meet with Harvey, a writer I met at the UFO Congress in March. We connected at the conference and I initially thought he might be interested in helping me write my book. When I found out we would both be in New Mexico, we made arrangements to meet again in person. He would be waiting for me at the car rental area. When I got there, he was sitting on one of the big couches lining the window area. He quickly jumped up to meet me, and before I knew it, we were off on our way to Roswell. Harvey was filled with questions for me right from the beginning. I found it difficult to explain my views to him about certain aspects of my beliefs as well as my experiences. He was extremely analytical, making me unsure of whether our partnership would work. Our thinking was opposite enough to make for great writing, but the process could be too difficult. I spent the next few days in Roswell wondering what on earth I was doing there. Harvey listened to many of the speakers while I was left to roam around on my own, as I was not interested in most of the lectures. Since 1988, I have had knowledge that has only become somewhat accepted in the last few years. From I made a promise to myself not to overindulge in other people's information. Many see this as being foolish, they wonder why I wouldn't want to learn anything new. It is very simple, I have all the information I need. My experiences have been extensive and detailed, why would I want to have someone lecture me about the reality of my own experience? Why would I want someone to tell me that my experiences are good or evil? I know what I have experienced. No one on earth can take that truth away from me, I will be my own judge. Even though the festival was going on until July 5th, I didn't feel right about staying until the end. I woke in the morning of the 4th and had the overwhelming urge to leave. Harvey had rented the car from Albuquerque, so I had no way of getting out of town. And is, however, didn't present a problem as much as it did a challenge. I knew that with the strength of my feeling to leave, a ride would present itself to me. As usual, I was correct. A wonderful artist I met offered to drive me to Albuquerque. When I told Harvey, he became upset. The purpose of being at the festival was to meet with Harvey and see if maybe we could work together. Although I found him to be an exceptional writer, I had the strong impression that I needed to write the book about my experiences on my own. My hope was that Harvey would be understanding of my insight. The drive to Albuquerque was a long one, but I enjoyed my time with the artist. He was a very kind and interesting man. When we finally arrived, it was dinner time and, after I rented a car for the second leg of my journey, we both drove to have dinner together. We had a wonderful conversation and dinner was excellent. I knew that this would be my last meal for some time that wouldn't be camp food. After dinner, I had to get on the road if I wanted to get anywhere before I got too tired. The sun was low on the horizon as we stepped out of the restaurant and walked back to our cars. I was happy now that I felt free of any restrictions. I decided to start driving towards Chinlen, see where the road led me. We said our goodbyes and I jumped into the car, ready for another adventure. As the sun went down, I got very tired, but I kept driving. I had the feeling that I had to get to Canyon de Chelly before I could rest. It was comforting to know where the campground was and that arriving late would not be a problem. As I pushed myself to the limit, I finally arrived at my favorite campground at 1 in the morning. Exhausted, I pulled into the campsite and fell asleep in the car. I woke to the sounds of flute music. It didn't take long for Stevenson to come over and say hello. He told me that I had arrived on the right day. There was going to be a sweat lodge later that afternoon. Stevenson chuckled as he told me that the person who originally requested the sweat lodge had asked for it to be postponed a day. Furthermore, the medicine man had also said to Stevenson that it would have to be changed to a day later than it was originally scheduled. Stevenson said that they must have been waiting for me. I smiled as I thought of everything I had been through the day before in order to get there. If I had left Roswell on the following day as originally planned, I would have missed it. I spent the day relaxing and catching up on my sleep from the night before. Before I knew it, Stevenson was beginning to prepare the fire for the sweat lodge rocks. I walked over and asked if I could help. He was pleased, and so I began to drag wood over to the fire pit. As I did, a woman came over and began to help as well. She introduced herself as Chantel. She told me how she had been traveling and camping all around the Four Corners area. I could clearly see that she was on her own spiritual journey, searching for some food for her soul, as I was. After the fire was going well, Chantel and I went back to our tents to change in preparation for the sweat. When I arrived back at the lodge, I was amazed to see that a man from Europe, whom I had met last year, was there. We began to talk and he said to me that I must have a strong spirit because nothing had gone right for them to have had the sweat the day before. The medicine man arrived and talked with all of the participants for a few minutes. As he prepared some herbs for the sweat, I asked him what they were. I told him that if he didn't want to tell me, I would respect his decision. Not only did he tell me, but but also he gave me a piece of it and told me to taste it. I was very touched by his openness and thanked him. After he walked away, Stevenson said, "I must be very special. The medicine man won't even tell him when he asks. And it meant a great deal to me, but, in some strange way, I was not surprised. The Sweats Lodge was exactly what I needed to begin my journey into the Four Corners area. It was an amazing release for me and helped me to focus. The ceremony ended and we all went back to our campsites to get cleaned up before rejoining each other for the traditional mutton dinner. As with the year before, I found that the people at the dinner had a special open bond with each other. It was a wonderful experience despite my fatigue. While everyone was beginning to leave for the night, Stevenson came over to me and asked if I would participate in a ceremony that he had asked the medicine man to do. I felt honored that he asked, since this would be a genuine Navajo ceremony. I said yes with the knowledge that I would never be able to tell anyone any details about the ceremony out of respect. I had to make a quick trip to my tent before the ceremony began and I walked with Chantel. We stood and talked for a few minutes. She made some very interesting comments to me, considering she knew nothing about me. She said that she was amazed at how Stevenson and the medicine man interacted with me. She was envious of the clear connection I had with the Navajo people. In the darkness, she said, "It's almost as though they recognize you or something, like you being here was preordained." In that moment I knew that she had a good connection with her spirit, even if she didn't recognize it. I told her I wanted to tell her a story before she left the next morning. We said goodnight and after a quick trip to my tent, I went to the Hogan, a traditional Navajo home, for the ceremony. After the ceremony with Stevenson and the medicine man, I had a deep and restful sleep. When I woke, Chantel and I had coffee together. She wanted to get on the road, so we exchanged email addresses with one another. She was taken aback by the brief outline of my story and then told me that she could tell there was something different about me. When she left the campground, I enjoyed the rest of my day around the Chinle area with Stevenson. The following day, I called the Anderson family to let them know I would like to come out to see them in Colorado. They had bought land near Durango, close to where we met the year previous. They had planned on camping there for the summer and invited me to camp with them. It was perfect timing, since it gave them a day to get settled on their new land before I arrived. I was excited to see them again. Early in the morning I left Chinle and arrived in Colorado around noon. After traveling in circles for a while, I finally found the Andersons' land. As I turned the corner off the dirt road onto the private drive, my heart began to speed up. After I had met this family the previous year, I began to write my book, sending them my story as I wrote it. When we met, I had said nothing about aliens, so I was sure they would have a lot of questions. I was as happy as I was nervous and excited. I drove very slowly since the road was rough. When I turned the last corner, I saw them all standing beside their travel van. With them was a girl whom I did not recognize. They all looked up and waved as I pulled up beside them. Jason and Kathleen seemed as excited as I was. Jason introduced his niece, Leanne, to me. She looked to be in her early 20s and, as I had with their daughter, I felt that she was another amazing extension of this family. I knew instantly that this would be an interesting visit. Over the next couple of days, I shared the stories of my life with the Andersons. Andy, in turn, shared with me their philosophies on life and what had led them to this land in Colorado. Sustainable living was their original reason for buying the land. And their ultimate goal was to eventually leave the bustle of the city where they currently lived and begin a more peaceful and fulfilling life. Jason, Kathleen and Leanne were students of the earth, constantly learning how they could leave the fewest footprints on it as possible. Homemade soaps, natural building, and medicinal herbs, these were only a few of the topics they shared with me. It was very clear as to why I was so drawn to these people when we had met at the campground outside Durango. If I could envision the type of person that the aliens wanted their message to go out to, it was people like the Andersons. Leanne was an interesting young woman and I felt a real connection with her. She had the spirit of a warrior, strong, determined, and focused. The other side of her was like that of an angel, delicate, passionate, and filled with compassion and love.